أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد والثناء لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening and the return of our Imam, please recite the salawat. As we mentioned, first we're going to be addressing a basic practical ruling that is something that we need. What I want to address tonight is related to intention. We know that the most important component in any worship is the intention. If you perform the prayer but you don't have an intention, at best you're exercising. It's not a prayer. If you refrain from eating and drinking throughout the day, but you don't have the intention of fasting, or you have the wrong intention, it's obviously not going to count. The most important thing in any worship is the intention. All right. But the question is, what is an intention? Sometimes it really frustrates me when you go to one of our centers in the month of Ramadan or other months, and then you talk about a recommended act, a recommended prayer. And once you announce, for example, there's 2 rakahs of prayer, and you're done explaining how to do it, loud shouts come from the back of the masjid asking, what's the intention? Look, intention isn't anything special. Intention is that you are doing this act, which you understand what it is, for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Is it that difficult? You don't need to put a title on it. You don't need to call it Salatul Ghufayla, for example. You explain that tonight it's mustahab to pray 2 rak'ah in this particular way. That's the intention. You don't need to know a title or say, God, I'm doing this for the sake of such and such and so and this and that. Qurbatan ila Allah. You don't need to do that. In fact, even if you say it, but what you're saying is not really in your mind, it's not going to count. What's important, intention is in your heart, in your mind. Saying the intention in any worship, not only is it not necessarily, it won't even count. What's important is in your heart. You may say, I'm praying this prayer, قُرْبَةً إِلَى اللَّهِ, but your intention is the guy next to me is going to be listening to my prayer and watching me pray, and that's why I'm doing this. It's a riya, it's invalid. Saying it doesn't mean anything. What's important is to actually know what you're doing it and do it sincerely and only for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, because He's asked me to do this, that's why I'm doing it. That's intention. Okay. Now, for fasting is one of the worships. Definitely, we need to have an intention. But we normally all do, okay? Regularly, religious believers, knowing that the month of Ramadan is approaching, already have an intention that tomorrow I'm going to be fasting. They wake up in the morning, they engage in their day-to-day activities without eating breakfast, without eating lunch, refraining and abstaining from drinking and so on and so forth. All that is with the understanding that I am abstaining from that for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We have that intention, usually, okay? However, sometimes there could be a bit of an issue. That's why I'm addressing intention in the context of the rulings of fast, because that's what we're trying to address. Sometimes we have a bit of a problem. What is that? The problem is, sometimes shaitan gets into you to break your fast. Okay. Sometimes shaitan may get into you thinking that, oh, you know, I don't want to continue this fast. It's too difficult for me. Or, God forbid, you get tempted to do something that would invalidate the fast. We're going to talk about some of those, at least, if not all, at least some of those that invalidate the fast. It's not only eating and drinking. One, God forbid, may have a temptation, shahwa, that they would want to break their fast, do something that invalidates the fast. Okay. Now, if somebody makes that intention, they don't even do it yet, does that invalidate the fast? If I intend to break my fast now, or in a couple of hours, in a few minutes, I'm making the intention to no longer fast, basically. Does that cause or create a problem for my intention of fasting? Does that invalidate the fast? The answer is sort of yes. What I mean by sort of is, for example, Ayatollah Khamenei on some of those examples has an obligatory precaution. He says, for instance, if you intend to commit something that invalidates the fast, you decide, okay, I've had it, that steak looks too juicy, I'm going to have it. Okay. If you make that intention, I'm going to have that, I go in there, I order the food, they're bringing it, and you end up saving yourself and not eating it. What happens? He says, well, there's an obligatory precaution there. What is the obligatory precaution? You need to finish that day of fast and make it up later as well. Okay. Just because the intention was there to no longer continue that fast and to actually break it by having that food, that snack, whatever it is. Or in general, not specifically intending to do something that breaks the fast, making the intention that I'm not going to continue this fast beyond a certain hour. If you make that intention, that goes contrary to your intention to fast, it creates a problem. In some of those instances, there's an obligatory precaution, sometimes there's a fatwa. In any case, that fast is not going to be something that will be accepted. You will have to make that up. So the intention is important. You should be careful not to even make the intention to commit something that's going to break the fast. One step above that, what if I don't actually make the intention of invalidating the fast? But I have doubts. Should I not? The component that makes the fast a fast and salm is the intention. Now when I have a doubt with regards to this, should I continue, should I not? That means the intention to be fasting for this day is cut off. You no longer have that intention. You're doubtful if you want to continue it or not. The Maraja, at least Ayatollah Khamenei and Ayatollah Sistani, say that if you start to have second thoughts on whether you want to continue the fast or not, again, your fast is gone. Okay. So we have to be careful, make sure we have that intention to, inshallah, have our fast count and enjoy the blessings of the fast of the month of Ramadan. Recite a salawat. We said that we want to, over the course of these nights that we hear, cover on each night one of the ma'asumeen, one of the Ahlul Bayt, and speak very briefly about them, but touch on what may be an important factor, an important quality in them, an important accomplishment in their life, something that inshallah we can benefit from. And as I said, although we can have sessions upon sessions on each of the ma'sumeen, sometimes it's good to go over all of the ma'sumeen in a short period of time, just to, whether it's refreshing our minds about them or learning. Sometimes we spend a lot of time on one or two of the ma'sumeen, some of the other ma'sumeen get left out. We have no information, no knowledge of them. So sometimes it's good to approach it in this way. That's why we're doing it in this way. That's why we are every night covering, as difficult as it is, really what I'm trying to think of, what I want to say about the Holy Prophet or about Amir al-Mu'mineen, is difficult. Because each of the qualities of these individuals, to the extent even that we can understand, because much of it we really can't understand, even if we were to explain one of them thoroughly, it would take really and truly, it would take a lot of time. Okay, so picking a couple or a few to discuss is very difficult. The other point that I'd like to mention is everything that we say, or everything that we understand of the ma'sumeen, is something that we need to learn from. Everything that we learn of their lives is something that is, in a sense, a practical lesson that we can take. Yesterday when I was talking about the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, I talked about what the Holy Prophet was able to accomplish very briefly, in the sense that to really and truly explain what he has accomplished, it's not something that I can even do. But we tried to touch on it a bit. Afterwards, I mentioned that, well, there's something that's a bit more practical, and that was that accomplishment to be able to change a nation from being the most uncivilized to being a nation that is going to spread this message of God and create an Islamic civilization in the region, which will become a global one that will change the face of the earth. In order to have this accomplishment, the most important thing in the Holy Prophet was self-building. We mentioned that. But what I want to say is that the other stuff that was mentioned about the Holy Prophet is also things that we need to learn from. For example, we talked about the Holy Prophet changing the ideology of a nation. Well, that's something to learn from. One of the things that we are having trouble with, especially in the Shia community. The Holy Prophet had the policy of open doors and bringing everybody in. On a regular basis, there were new believers, new mu'mineen coming into the community. People were actively involved with bringing others in. That's something to learn from. Are we actually involved with that at all? If we're not, then we're not reflecting the life of the Holy Prophet. So everything that's being said, everything which we learn from the Holy Prophet, is something that we need to take as a lesson. We're not just saying this just to become familiar, no. It's a blessing to mention them, to speak about them, but if all of what is mentioned is not taken with the understanding that this is something I need to whatever extent I can, implement in my own life, then we have really lost the point. With that, tonight I would like to cover and talk briefly about Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi. And I should say, whatever I say about Amir al-Mu'mineen, we're actually talking about the student of the Holy Prophet. This reflects how great the Holy Prophet was, that his student is Amir al-Mu'mineen. There's a reason why I say that. Why? Because when you look at Amir al-Mu'mineen, there's a lot of people that have studied that character non-Muslims, non-Shias have studied the character of Amir al-Mu'mineen. They've written books on this personality. People have written poetry. There's a very famous one in Farsi by this poet called Shahriyar. They say Ayatollah Marashi Najafi, one of the great ulama in Qum, one night had a dream. He was a very spiritual person. He had these types of dreams. He had a dream of a poet by the name of Shahriyar reciting this poetry in the presence of the Ahlul Bayt, that the Holy Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt are asking him to recite. What is it? It's a famous line. I don't know if we have any Iranians in the crowd. It's the famous poem that starts, I believe, with this, that Aliyei Humayi Rahmat Tuche Ayati Khodara. It's a very well-known now poetry. He recited that poetry in the dream, and he sees, this Ayatollah sees, that the Holy Prophet, the Ahlul Bayt, are respecting this man for this poetry that he has done. In the morning he wakes up and he sends people in search of this poet, and they find him and they bring him, and he says, "You've done a new piece of poetry, can you please recite that? It's about Amir al-Mu'mineen." He says, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Yeah, you've done something, I want to hear it." He says, "I haven't shared this with anybody, how do you know I have done?" He tells him about the dream, and Shahriyar recites the poetry. Okay, now all this is for this. In the poetry, and this line is something that a lot of people who have tried to study the personality, the character of Amir al-Mu'mineen have come up with. Like, "I can't call you God, and I can't call you a human being. I don't know what to really call you." Okay. Now this is said about Amir al-Mu'mineen. It's less heard about the Holy Prophet. But this reflects how great the Holy Prophet was, that his student is something that whoever studies is wondering what to call this man. It's important for us to make this point. So who is Amir al-Mu'mineen? Although we truly can't describe him, as we mentioned with the Holy Prophet as well. There's a few basic facts that I think everybody should know before we get into some of what's a bit more important about the life of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Amir al-Mu'mineen was born about 10 years before the prophethood of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. So the Holy Prophet is 30. His father is Abu Talib, one of the great believers, one of the greatest believers. There's a controversy about that, but he's clearly and most definitely one of the believers in the Holy Prophet. His mother is Fatima bint Asad, and his father, Abu Talib, had a number of children, and there were financial difficulties. Amir al-Mu'mineen ended up being raised by the Holy Prophet. As a child, Amir al-Mu'mineen was raised by the Holy Prophet. He's 10 years old when the Holy Prophet receives the message. Now, before that, he's still being trained by the Holy Prophet. Let's not forget, we mentioned last night, the Holy Prophet was a Nabi before he was a Rasul. He wasn't a Rasul before the age of 40. But he was in communication, he was worshipping, he was purifying himself, he was elevating his soul and his spirit before that. He was engaged in months of worship in the mountains. Amir al-Mu'mineen is part of this. Even before he's a prophet, he's training Amir al-Mu'mineen. Before he's a Rasul, he's training Amir al-Mu'mineen. When the Holy Prophet receives the message, Amir al-Mu'mineen salawatullah wa salamu alayhi is the first to accept this message. We even have accounts from the Imam himself that through the teachings of the Holy Prophet, he had reached a spiritual state where he would see what the Holy Prophet saw. He would hear what the Holy Prophet heard. The revelation was to the Holy Prophet, but Amir al-Mu'mineen was a witness to that. He observed that. He wasn't someone that would just see the Holy Prophet, and the Holy Prophet just had to tell him that he's in touch with angels, and the angel has sent a message from God. Amir al-Mu'mineen witnessed this firsthand. He's age 10. This is important. He becomes the first believer, the one who supports the Holy Prophet in Mecca. When the Holy Prophet leaves for Medina, how old is Amir al-Mu'mineen? He's 23, we already mentioned. 13 years in Mecca, the Holy Prophet is. So when they leave, Amir al-Mu'mineen is now 23 years of age. We know the story of Amir al-Mu'mineen sleeping in the bed of the Holy Prophet in order not to reveal that the Holy Prophet has left the city, for them to think that he's there in bed. He sacrifices his life, he puts it on the line to save the Holy Prophet. And the Holy Prophet, when he wants to enter Medina, he waits. He doesn't enter the city. He waits until Amir al-Mu'mineen comes. Together they enter the city. Because the Holy Prophet went earlier. He was there for a couple of weeks at least. But he stood outside of Medina so that he can enter with his successor, Amir al-Mu'mineen. That was important. In Medina, Amir al-Mu'mineen is a supporter of the Holy Prophet, obviously. He's one of the main individuals in the battlefield. We've heard those stories. On the day of Ghadir, on the 18th of Dhul-Hijjah, the Holy Prophet announces to a large audience the Khilafah of Amir al-Mu'mineen after the Holy Prophet. And a month or so later, the Holy Prophet passes away. Amir al-Mu'mineen becomes the Imam. For 25 years, meaning until the year 35 after the Hijrah, Amir al-Mu'mineen does not have government. The year 35, the people, in a sense, a revolution against the third Khalifa succeeds in a sense, because all of these have to be discussed thoroughly so we can understand what that was. The third Khalifa was assassinated. Amir al-Mu'mineen was begged to lead. 4 years and 9 months, he was the Khalifa. So from the year 35 to 40, Amir al-Mu'mineen is the Khalifa. 40 years after the Hijrah, 23 years before the Hijrah, Amir al-Mu'mineen lived for 63 years. It's interesting. Amir al-Mu'mineen followed the Holy Prophet in everything, including the number of years he lived. It's amazing. If I want to give you the examples of how hard Amir al-Mu'mineen tried to imitate every single thing the Holy Prophet did, carefully. It's interesting, even the number of years he lived follows the Holy Prophet. This is a quick rundown. We know the Imam married the daughter of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi. The lady Fatima al-Zahra, and together they had 4 children, as it is commonly understood, potentially 5 children, as it is again commonly understood. It would have been 5. And Amir al-Mu'mineen had other children from wives that he married after the lady Fatima al-Zahra salamullah alayha was made shaheed, including Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas and others. This is some basic information that we should all have. Now, what is it that if we were to pinpoint as a concept to remember Amir al-Mu'mineen and to understand him through this concept that would pretty much connect the different segments of his life? We just explained Amir al-Mu'mineen was with the Holy Prophet for 23 years. He's there as the closest companion of the Holy Prophet. the best of the companions of the Holy Prophet, the supporter of the Holy Prophet with everything he had. Okay. 25 years, which inshallah we'll briefly touch on, we usually understand that as the time of silence. Amir al-Mu'mineen is not the Khalifa. He is not taking many stances, or it is commonly said that he is silent at that time. And 5 years of government, what is it that we can say, a concept or an understanding that we can have of Amir al-Mu'mineen that can connect all of these, and we can interpret and explain all of that? What I could think of, what I would like to use, if we understand, because there's many things that have been said about Amir al-Mu'mineen, and they're all very true, each of them needs to be understood and explained. But one concept, one description that the Holy Prophet has given of Amir al-Mu'mineen, I would like to explain Amir al-Mu'mineen with this statement of the Holy Prophet. What is it? The statement is this: Aliyun ma'al haqq wal haqq ma'ah la yaftariqan hatta yarida alayya al hawd. Ali is with the truth, and truth is with him. They do not separate until they enter upon me the pool of Kawthar on the day of judgment. How does this summarize the character, in a sense? Again, each of the dimensions of this man is something that would require many sessions to understand, and even then we would still not be able to understand. But how does this, how do we want to connect those in this way? Let's understand what this means first, the statement, and then I'll give examples throughout the life of Amir al-Mu'mineen. I feel we don't get exactly what this statement means usually. We feel, for example, this is an understanding I think a lot of us, including myself maybe before, had this understanding. When you say somebody is with the truth, and the truth is with them, we usually understand it in this way, that you have, for example, in a debate, okay, if you and I disagree, if I'm with the truth, what does that mean? That means my opinion is in accordance with truth. What I'm saying is right, it is correct. Or if you're right, that means that what you're saying is the truth. That's right, that's haqq. And what I said is not haqq. So we understand the statement about Amir al-Mu'mineen to be that Amir al-Mu'mineen, whatever he says is true. If you ever have a question with regards to anything, ask Ali, what he says is the truth. Okay, this is usually what we understand. Is this wrong? No, it's not wrong. This is definitely true about Amir al-Mu'mineen. Aliyun ma'al haqq. If you have a question regarding anything, go and ask him. What he says is going to be truth. That's the right opinion. That's the right understanding. That's the right stance to take. However, it is not limited to that. Ali being with the truth, and the truth being with Ali, I feel is not limited to simply what Ali states, what Ali says. Aliyun ma'al haqq, wal haqq ma'ah, means Ali bears the truth, and he moves, as he moves everyone towards the truth. Okay. What do I mean by that? Maybe through the examples I can explain this a bit better. We just mentioned Amir al-Mu'minin was only 10 years old when the Holy Prophet became a Rasul. All right? I really ask and beg everybody, please pay attention to the details, okay? Do we understand what a 10-year-old boy means? Okay. A 10-year-old boy, the Holy Prophet has become a prophet. The Holy Prophet is in what type of an environment? We try to touch on this a bit. He's in an environment of complete ignorance. Right? And people believing in false ideologies, in ridiculous ideologies, and being adamant about it to the extent that they would be willing to kill for that ideology. Right? They're stuck in their ways. Okay. The Holy Prophet is coming to attack the foundations of the ideology of the community, the society that he lives in. Right? Imagine a 10-year-old boy in this society, knowing what everybody believes in, how everybody behaves, how passionate people are towards their belief system, and this man that is close to him is saying something contradictory completely and 100% against the ideology of the society they live in. People that are willing to kill. All right? It doesn't matter how close you are to this person. It's not easy to say, I accept this. And it's not easy to say, not only do I accept this, but I will be one of those that will push this religion forward. It's not an easy... Have you seen people who come up with an ideology or some thought, some belief of some sort, not necessarily religious, that is completely different than the people around them? Whether it's right or wrong is a different story. I don't want to address that. But their own children would sometimes like to disassociate themselves with that parent of theirs. Why? Because it's very difficult. Everybody's mocking their parent. Everybody's making fun of them. They're doing some very wrong things to them. When we read the history of the Holy Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt, because of what we know happened later on, the victories after victories, and the respect that the people now have of Amir al-Mu'mineen, we fail to realize the struggle they went through to make things the way they are today. We don't feel it. Again, none of us have actually done this. I'll mention that example today again. If I were to come here and tell you something that goes against your firm belief in whatever it is, and you're passionate about that, you guys are going to start objecting while I'm speaking. You're going to start even maybe mocking me. I'm not sure my own son is going to like to be around me at that moment. Okay. Do we really understand this? Amir al-Mu'mineen makes this choice. He's not doing this just because the Holy Prophet has raised him. He's not even his father. He's not doing it because he's raised him. He's doing it because he understands this is the truth. And he's willing to make the sacrifice for pushing this agenda forward. Let me mention something, an example or a passage of history that's a bit more understandable maybe for all of us. We've heard it. Again, I want to try to mention this in a way and stress on this story from a perspective that we need to realize, and want to realize what this actually means. And there's an important reason why I'm doing this, because we're going to be going, inshallah, we should be part of this struggle. Okay, we learn from these characters, we learn from these imams, from the ma'sumin, how to do this, what we need to do. You've all heard the story of the verse, وَأَنذِرْ عَشِيرَتَكَ الْأَقْرَبِينَ. The Holy Prophet was supposed to announce his prophethood to his own family. They say at least two occasions he had to invite them. He invited them to his house. They already knew he has these claims of prophethood. They used to make fun of him. His own uncle, Abu Lahab, used to make fun of him. They're all invited. It's difficult to even invite them. Look, I'm sure if we were in those circumstances, we would have second thoughts. Should we actually do this? When God says, أَنذِرْ عَشِيرَتَكَ الْأَقْرَبِينَ, the Holy Prophet says, سَمْعًا وَطَاعَةً. Definitely. He invites them. Amir al-Mu'mineen is the one who's preparing the meal, apparently. And everybody sits, they have the meal. The Holy Prophet wants to begin a talk, a conversation with them. Abu Lahab doesn't allow it. He starts talking about whatever it is and he messes up, he ruins the session. They leave, the Holy Prophet has to invite them over again. They invite them over again, everybody's sitting. After the meal, the Holy Prophet stands. Just imagine, the Holy Prophet has very few followers. These followers are lower class people. These are important points about that history. They are from tribes that are not respected, from races that are not respected in that society. And all the wealthy people, the middle and upper class, do not believe in the Holy Prophet. And he's inviting his family that are considered middle upper class or upper middle class. They're somewhere between the middle and upper class. They're a very well-known family in Mecca. They're wealthy people. They're influential people. He's inviting them to come and have a meal with them. And then afterwards he's saying, I am the Prophet of God. God has sent me with this message. Who is willing to believe in me and become my successor? If we really put aside what we know of what happened later, if somebody would come here today and tell you that they're a prophet of God, and who would like to believe in them and become their successor, all of you would burst in laughter. Okay. That's what they did. It's funny. What are you talking about? Your successor? Who do you think you are? Amir al-Mu'min doesn't take this as a joke. He stands and says, Prophet, I believe in you. We mention this as a story, but do we really get the magnitude of what happened there? Okay. Amir al-Mu'minin, because he saw this to be the right thing, the truth, he stood for it and allowed his relatives, his uncles, and everybody in that room to make fun of him. Everybody make fun of his father and his cousin, the Holy Prophet, but he knew this is the right thing. It didn't scare him. People are going to mock me, make fun of me. No. When it came the time the Holy Prophet wanted someone or needed someone to sleep in his bed, Amir al-Mu'mineen saw that is right, against his desires, against everything that a human being would have to try to save himself. Amir al-Mu'mineen stepped on all of that. He slept in that bed. And we know he wasn't supposed to get killed. Amir al-Mu'mineen at that point is not given that knowledge. it seems like those guys are going to come in, he's going to get killed because they want to kill the Holy Prophet. Right? He stands for the truth. In Medina, when the battles begin, the one who is always there, steadfast, fighting all the way to the end, in all the battles, is Amir al-Mu'mineen, along with the Holy Prophet. He's the student of the Holy Prophet that's there with him. Whether it's the battle of Badr, which they were victorious in, or in Uhud, that the believers failed, but Amir al-Mu'mineen was there to protect the Holy Prophet. In all these instances during the life of the Holy Prophet, Amir al-Mu'mineen wasn't just saying the truth. He was standing for the truth. It didn't matter what the implication was. It didn't matter what the risk was. If this is haqq, this is the right thing to do, it needs to be done, and I will do it. Okay. This is part of what that means. But something happens after the demise of the Holy Prophet with regards to Amir al-Mu'mineen, that the implication of this statement becomes even broader. What is that? Recite the salawat, please. Amir al-Mu'mineen becomes the Imam. Right. He becomes the Imam. Imam means leader. Most of us have a deficient understanding of the concept of Imam, what we mean by Imam. Most of us are like that. We don't understand what an imam means, what imamah actually means. The responsibility of taking the ummah in the right direction falls on the shoulders of Imam or of Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi after the demise of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. That was something that the Holy Prophet at his time had as a responsibility, and that's pretty much what we can summarize what we talked about last night. That was the imam of the Holy Prophet, that he was able to change these people from what they were to what they became. But now Amir al-Mu'mineen has to carry out that responsibility. Aliyun ma'al haqq wal haqq ma'ah has a different implication here. What is it? We all know the story of what happens after the Holy Prophet. And in summary, what we say is Amir al-Mu'mineen, who was supposed to be the Khalifa of the Holy Prophet, he ended up not receiving the bay'ah, the allegiance, the pledge of allegiance of the people for Khilafah. He didn't receive that at that point. 25 years later, he did. What did Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi do? What was the responsibility of Amir al-Mu'mineen during this time? This is something that we have very little knowledge of, and I think we have a lot of misconceptions, misunderstandings about. As I said earlier on, usually we call this time the time of what? The time of the silence of the Imam. The Imam does not, except for the first couple of months, according to some, a few days, according to others. Amir al-Mu'mineen at that point talked about his Khilafah. He tried to get people involved, get supporters, so that he can have the Khilafah. He tried doing that. After that, you don't hear of it. Okay. The Imam wasn't involved with that. So what did the Imam do? What did the Imam do? And what was his responsibility? Usually our understanding is this. Usually. Our understanding is that Amir al-Mu'mineen during this time, thank you very much. Recite a salawat, please. Amir al-Mu'mineen during this time is worshipping, maybe building orchards, as some accounts put. He's digging wells, not involved with anything. This is our understanding usually of Amir al-Mu'mineen during this time. However, according to Amir al-Mu'mineen himself, this is not what the Imam has done. What the Imam did during that time, whether it was the silence and beyond that that happened, and he didn't go against the Khulafa at that time, he was implementing the Imamah. He was doing this al-haqqu, or aliyun ma'al haqq wal-haqqu ma'ah, during that time. And afterwards, when he changed his tactics or his policy of how he was going to interact with people, and during the 5 years of the Khilafah of the Imam, Amir al-Mu'mineen is implementing this concept. The silence of the Imam and not taking arms against the Khulafa, where we definitely know if he wanted to, no one would be able to stand to the sword of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Him not taking to the sword is Aliyun ma'al haqq. There's a serious question there. Wasn't Ali supposed to be the Khalifa? Wasn't he supposed to rule? Wasn't he supposed to govern? If he was, and the sword could do it, then why didn't he take to the sword? It's a good question, and it takes time to explain that. But briefly, the reason why he chose not to take to the sword was because that was the right thing to do. That was haqq. For what reason? So that he says haqq only? Or for the reason of him wanting to walk the ummah, take the ummah in the right direction? It's the second. It's the latter. Amir al-Mu'mineen, by remaining silent, is making sure the ummah moves in the direction of haqq. Amir al-Mu'mineen makes sure that this ummah, the nation that the Holy Prophet built over the course of 23 years, doesn't fragment and disappear. He wants to make sure that it continues moving in the right direction. It's going to have some ups and downs, but it'll continue to move in the right direction. If he doesn't take to the sword, they come to his door, he has to see the difficult scenes before his eyes, where the daughter of the Prophet is disrespected, but he will take that, because the right thing now is to remain silent. Okay. This silence at this time is standing for the truth. Not taking up his right is standing for the truth at this time. But is that all he did? He remained silent for 25 whole years? No. After a couple of months, people, tribes, started to rebel. Tribes started to want to go back to their shirk. People started to, there was a movement of apostasy, they call it, riddah. Where people started to, some people, some tribes, started to say, oh, the Prophet is gone now, we want to go back to our idols. Some of the tribes became started saying things like that. And that became something that started posing a threat to the rest of the nation, along with the different governments, the empires around the Muslim empire that were there. Amir al-Mu'mineen says at this point he felt the need of participating and helping the government system of the Muslims that was headed by those who did what? Who took the right of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Okay? Amir al-Mu'mineen, in a sense, this is one of the words we can use. We can word it differently. I'll use this wording first. In a sense, he helped them. He supported them. Of course, he didn't support them as them. He supported the Muslim Ummah. Okay. He helped the Muslim Ummah. But if that meant that he's going to work alongside of people who disrespected the daughter of the Prophet, he was going to do that. To move this in the right direction. There were opportunities, brothers and sisters, different ones, that if Amir al-Mu'mineen wanted to just slightly go off course, for all of the difficulties he had gone through, and he had a lot of justification he could have given it, to take power in his hands, he could have. But never. What do I mean? I'll give you a couple of examples. One is, after the second Khalifa was stabbed, and when he was passing away, he created a shura. We all know that, or at least some of us. He created a council of six individuals. Amir al-Mu'mineen was part of that. Five other individuals were there, including Uthman, Talha, Zubayr. This shura was supposed to appoint and elect the next Khalifa. The second Khalifa had said, one of those figures in that shura will have the veto power. Okay, whoever he sides with, if there's a tie, whoever he goes with, because it's six people, right? You can have a tie. If there's a tie, whoever this person is with, they will become the Khalifa. Amir al-Mu'mineen had his own vote for himself. Zubayr sided with Amir al-Mu'mineen. Uthman obviously had his own vote. And Talha would vote for him. Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas and this other individual, you had three groups of two. That individual comes to Amir al-Mu'mineen first and says to him, look, if you are willing to accept that we pledge allegiance with you with the condition that you will rule based on the Book of God, the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet, and the Sunnah of the first two Khalifas, I'll pledge allegiance with you. Okay? That would have been it. He would have pledged allegiance. There would have been three votes there. The other three didn't count. Amir al-Mu'mineen would have become Khalifa. Right? Was it difficult? Isn't it important to have the Khilafah? Wasn't it that important that the Holy Prophet made it a point in Ghadir to gather everybody in that heat to announce Amir al-Mu'mineen is the Khalifa? Wasn't it all the case? If it wasn't so important, why did the daughter of the Holy Prophet sacrifice her life for the Khilafah of Amir al-Mu'mineen? Is that important, right? If Amir al-Mu'mineen would have just said yes, at this one moment in time, just to get them to pledge allegiance and later not abide by that, forget the sunnah of the first two Khalifa. Because everybody else did that, didn't they? They said, we are going to be acting on the sunnah of the Holy Prophet. Did they act on the sunnah of the Prophet? Obviously they didn't. Amir al-Mu'minin could have said, okay, yeah, whatever, just pledge your allegiance. I'll do what's right later. No. Aliyun ma'a al-haq, wal-haqqu ma'a. Only does what's right. If he has to do this one wrong thing to get to Khilafah, to do all the great things in the world, no, this wrong thing is wrong. I'm not going to do it. A second instance. Look, the third Khalifa, during the time of the third Khalifa, things became very filthy and dirty. His relatives, his close ones, they started gaining power, wealth, property, this, that, the other, and they would do whatever they wanted, including people getting killed, and they wouldn't receive any punishment for what they've done or what they did. People started getting frustrated with the situation. They made different moves. Eventually, there were two revolutions or two movements from two different parts of the Muslim Empire, one from Kufa, one from Egypt. They came to Medina protesting the decisions of the third Khalifa. Different things happen, it's a long story, but what ended up happening was that these people that had come from Kufa and Egypt, they stood in Medina. They insisted that the Khalifa step down. Some of the companions of the Holy Prophet joined this revolt and rebellion. And eventually they assassinated Uthman. Okay. Just imagine Amirul Mu'mineen, whose right has been usurped by three Khalifas. One of them is the current Khalifa. There are people, a good number of people, that are against the third Khalifa now. If it wasn't for his selflessness and the want to do the right thing, he could have easily justified, okay, this is the time, let's jump on the bandwagon. People don't like this Khalifa, there's a rebellion against this Khalifa. All he had to do was just support this. He could have easily done that. No. It's interesting, right? It's interesting. Amir al-Mu'mineen, who doesn't believe the third Khalifa is a Khalifa from God, for the sake of Islam, he feels that the responsibility is to protect the third Khalifa against the rebellion of a people who've been oppressed by the third Khalifa. I can't get into the details what that was all about and why that was the right choice, but he saw that the right thing is to support this man, protect him, this man who's taken the right of Amir al-Mu'mineen and has taken the right of his companions, his faithful companions, in different parts of the Muslim Empire, including Kufa, people who believed in Amir al-Mu'mineen were being oppressed. Amir al-Mu'mineen saw that, no, the right choice, the right decision is this. Protect the third Khalifa. When they came to Amir al-Mu'mineen after they had assassinated Uthman, which that's itself a long story, what happened, who actually assassinated Uthman? For what reasons? Whatever it was, Uthman was assassinated. They came to Amir al-Mu'mineen. They're begging him to lead. Interesting. Amir al-Mu'mineen says, leave me. Go to somebody else. It's better if you have someone else as a Khalifa and have me as a minister, someone who's helping out under that Khalifa. I don't want to be the Khalifa. Again, if you picture the scene, anyone with not even the right to rule would have taken that opportunity to rule. Amir al-Mu'mineen truly and honestly, he's not just pushing it away because he's doing ta'aruf, as they say in Farsi, or he's doing takalluf, maybe, I don't know if that's the right word to use for Urdu speakers. Mujamala, as the Arabic goes. He's not just saying it for that reason. Honestly, what he's saying is this. No, it's better if I don't. He's not accepting when they insist. He says, okay, if everybody's supportive of the right government, I will accept because it's my responsibility, not because you guys are telling me or giving me that. I'll accept because it's my responsibility. But no, you should only pledge allegiance to me knowing that this is how I'm going to rule. And he explained. What has happened over the course of these years, the privileges you have received wrongfully, the money that wrongfully you've taken from the Muslimin will be taken from you. Pledge knowing that this is the reason, or this is how I'm going to be ruling. He pushes people away, brothers and sisters. When they beg him, he says, I'm going to rule in this way. Now that he has government, it's interesting. There's a lot of lessons to take. As I said, in one night you can't really get to everything. But we're trying to make one point, and all these are to explain this one point. Recite the salawat, please. When he became the Khalifa, people started to break their allegiance. People started to object and say, we're not going to pledge allegiance. Like Muawiyah and people in Sham, they didn't pledge allegiance to Amir al-Mu'mineen. People who already pledged allegiance, like Talha, Zubayr, and others, decided that they're going to break their allegiance with Amir al-Mu'mineen. When people started doing that, what did Amir al-Mu'mineen do? He stood fast. And he fought. He fought three very serious battles to preserve the Islamic government. Because people wanted things from him that were not haqq, that were not Islam, that were not right. If he would have just given Kufa or Basra to Talha and Zubayr temporarily, just to hush them up for a couple of months, then even get rid of them after he's established his government, what happened in Jamal wouldn't have happened. He could have done that. With Muawiyah, if he would have given him Damascus, if he would have given him Sham, what happened would probably not happen. But no, Amir al-Mu'mineen said no. This is not happening. He started explaining what the right thing is and how he's going to govern with all the difficulties. And he established and implemented a government system that was established by the Holy Prophet, but on a much greater scale. The Holy Prophet established government in Medina. Gradually it grew. It included some other cities as well, but it was part of Arabia. Now, the empire, the Islamic empire, includes Egypt, it includes Iraq, it includes Iran, it includes Yemen, it includes the Gulf countries that we know of. It included parts of the subcontinent, the Indian subcontinent. Justice, which is the implementation of haqq in society. It's called qist. It's very difficult, especially when you increase or expand the empire. It becomes a lot more difficult. These examples that I gave, and I've gone over my time, were to show this. I want to go back to that statement. Aliyun ma'al haqq wal haqq ma'ah. What Amir al-Mu'mineen did, especially from the time of the Prophet onwards, the demise of the Holy Prophet onwards, he became the one that is supposed to guide this arc of salvation, the Muslim nation, in the right direction and keep it on the right path. Some people may jump off board, but he's supposed to control this ship and make sure this ship remains on the path of Haqq. It's a very difficult task, brothers and sisters. Amir al-Mu'mineen wasn't only able to keep himself, his words, his personal actions on the path of Haqq. He was able to keep the movement that was established by the Holy Prophet and handed over to him. He was able to keep this on the path of Haqq. His silence, his wars that he fought, are all for this. Okay. He took his loved ones being disrespected for this. He was assassinated for this. Keeping this ark that is moving, the Holy Prophet created it and had people join it. It's moving in the right direction. Amir al-Mu'mineen, despite not being Khalifa in those 25 years, still was the one that steered this and allowed it to move in the right direction. If anybody is Muslim today, and even those who are not Muslim, some of the great values that exist today throughout the globe that are considered human values that people fight for, like freedom, is because of what Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi has done, and without exaggeration. Okay. The closer a person is to Ali, the closer they are to Haqq. But people have different degrees of closeness to Ali. Some people are Muslim, to that extent they're close to Ali. Some people are Shia, they call themselves Shia, they have the love of Amir al-Mu'mineen, they're maybe a little bit closer. Then there are true followers of Ali, they are very close to him, actually on the ark, maybe even helping others move in that direction as well. Aliyun ma'al haqq wal haqq ma'a Ali, or wal haqq ma'a, means this: not just what he said is right, he led the people in this way, all these souls, the ummah, he made sure that it moves in the right direction. If it wasn't for the efforts of Amir al-Mu'mineen, there would be no Islam before even he became the Khalifa. If he would have remained silent and said nothing, hadn't participated, decided to have left the ummah, we wouldn't have had anything. He stood and made all the difficult choices. All of them were difficult for him to take for this purpose. His desire, his well-being, his ease and comfort meant nothing to him. What meant everything to him was Haqq. This is what it was. There was a request to have a few minutes of tawassul to the Ahlul Bayt, to have a remembrance of the Ahlul Bayt, the masab of the Ahlul Bayt. Inshallah, from this night onwards, we'll have just a few minutes, hopefully, inshallah. Recite a salawat. السلام عليكم يا أهل بيت النبوة وموضع الرسالة ومختلف الملائكة ومهبط الوحي ومعدنا الرحمن وخزان العلم ومنتهى الحلم. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you, my beloved Holy Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you. It was in your homes that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blessed us with guidance and revelation. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you. Angels descend upon you day in and day out, seeking permission before entering upon you. We spoke of Amirul Mu'mineen. This is the month of his Shahada. Let's all take our hearts to Najaf, the beautiful shrine of Amirul Mu'mineen. Assalamu alayka ya Amin Allah fi khalqi. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you, my beloved Imam, the one who was entrusted by Allah to guide people on the face of the earth. Ruhi fida. Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen. What can one say about Amir al-Mu'mineen? He's truly referred to as Awwal Madhloom. Why is he referred to as Awwal Madhloom? There were probably many reasons. But brothers and sisters, let me have a brief remembrance of Imam al-Husayn so we can understand the musibah of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Brothers and sisters, on the day of Ashura, Imam al-Husayn witnessed the shahada of his companions. He witnessed the shahada of his nephews. He witnessed the shahada and the killing of his own children. But there's something he didn't witness. He didn't go through, brothers and sisters. When the Imam was fighting all alone on the plains of Karbala, when eventually, after he had taken many wounds, he ended up falling from the horse, the enemies from afar had surrounded him. No one was feeling brave enough to go forth to the Imam. They all were afraid that maybe the Imam is alive. They were wondering how they can have the Imam show whether he's alive or not. The Mal'un called, "If you want to see if Hussein is alive, attack his tents, attack his women." When he heard the call, Imam al-Husayn with what remained in him of strength, forced himself up and he said, O Shi'atu ala Abi Sufyan, if you don't believe in God, at least be free men. I'm still alive, how can you attack my women? In Medina, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Salamullahi alayhi, was alive when the enemies attacked his household. His Fatima was crushed between the door and the wall. روحي فداك يا أمير المؤمنين أمير المؤمنين was supposed to witness them and for the sake of Allah remain silent. ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون اللهم إنا نسألك وندعوك باسمك العظيم الأعظم بالزهراء وأبيها وبعلها وبنيها والسر المستودع فيها بك يا الله 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 يا رحمن يا رحيم يا مقلب القلوب ثبت قلوبنا على دينك وعلى محبة أوليائك. والله we ask you to hasten the return of our imam. We ask you to help us become the true companions of the imam, those who will give everything they have for the beloved Imam. O Allah, we ask you to protect and prolong the life of all those helping the cause of Islam, especially the Maraja, and especially our beloved leader. Ya Allah, we ask you on this night to forgive us all of our sins. We ask you to forgive our parents, our grandparents, our relatives, all believers, those who are alive, those who've left this world. Ya Allah, we all have hajat, we all have needs. We may be ill, we may have loved ones that are ill, they may be in hospitals or suffering difficulties. We have some believers here in this crowd that are suffering from difficult illnesses. Ya Allah, we ask you by the right of Amir al-Mu'mineen that you grant all believers their hajat, their needs, that you cure all believers throughout the globe, inshallah, and relieve all of them from hardship and difficulty. O Allah, believers throughout the globe in different parts of the world are suffering from oppression, from the attacks of the disbelievers, especially our brothers currently in Iraq. They're suffering from the difficulties. Ya Allah, by the right of the Imam in Najaf, by the right of Amir al-Mu'mineen, we ask you and we beg you that you take away this disastrous event and the unfoldings in Iraq. You bless them with the ability to handle the circumstances, to be victorious in the face of these difficulties, inshallah. Ya Allah, we ask you to relieve all the people of the world of the oppressions they're facing. Min Nabi wa Alih, rahimallah man qara al-Fatiha ma'as-salawat.